This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك إنك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran says any agreement in the Vienna talks on the revival of the 2015 deal must include guarantees that no new sanctions will be imposed on Tehran once they are removed. Kazakhstan's president says order has been mainly restored across the country following days of violent protests triggered by a spike in fuel prices. And daily coronavirus cases hit a seven-month high in India, sparking fears of a repeat of last year's crisis in the South Asian country. Hello and welcome to your world news, come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. The top story this hour, Tehran says it wants guarantees that new sanctions will not be imposed on Iran as the country continues talks with the remaining parties to the 2015 deal. The Iranian foreign minister says his country demands removal of all sanctions imposed after the U.S. withdrew from the agreement known as the JCPOA. In an interview with Al Jazeera, Hossein Amir Abdullahian declared Iran wants assurances that it will be able to export oil and access its revenues. He said the ongoing negotiations in Vienna between Iran and the P4+1 are moving forward in the right direction. He said a good agreement can be reached in the talks if the Western negotiators show determination. The United States unilaterally pulled out of the JCPOA in 2018 and reinstated its sanctions against Tehran. The eighth round of negotiations between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 deal continues in the Austrian capital. Iran's top negotiator in the Vienna talks has met with South Korea's deputy foreign minister on the sidelines of the talks. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Vienna, Homa Liski, for the latest developments.
The talks are ongoing. Yesterday, we had news from the Russian ambassador, Mikhail Olyanov, that there's been another meeting between the 4+1, the remaining signatories of the JCPOA minus Iran, with the U.S. delegation led by Rob Malley, as they take stock of the latest developments and the progress that's been made in this round. Also last night, Mr. Barghari Khani, the head of Iran's delegation, when he was here entering the Palais Cobol behind me to go into more meetings, he was asked by reporters if the talks were moving ahead. He said that they are positive and things are moving along. But today there was a meeting between Mr. Barghari and his South Korean counterpart. Of course, this is not directly related to the Vienna talks, but we are hearing that during this meeting with his South Korean counterpart, there were some discussion of the frozen funds, Iran's frozen funds in South Korean banks, amounting to somewhere between $7 to $8 billion. And Mr. Barghari in this meeting said that regardless of the result of the Vienna talks, the South Korean government is duty-bound, in his words, to release these frozen funds, and the U.S. secondary sanctions should not be used as an excuse for South Korea not to release these funds. And he called South Korea's refusal up to this stage to do this as illegal and unjustifiable. So the fact that the South Korean delegate is here is seen as a good sign, of course, but we'll have to see if the Vienna talks are going to conclude successfully. Russian Ambassador Mr. Ulyanov has said he believes it is possible to reach an agreement or a conclusion of the talks by early February. Iran saying that if the Americans are serious about completely lifting all of the sanctions, including the Trump-era sanctions, in a verifiable manner, and also giving Iran guarantees, then Iran also believes that an agreement or a restoration of the JCPOA will indeed be possible soon. But we'll have to see if that's going to happen.
A senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says Americans will have to leave Iraq in a more humiliating manner than the way they left Afghanistan. The commander of the IRGC's Quds Force said the Americans are facing various problems in the region, while the resistance front is advancing on a daily basis. Brigadier General Ismail Ghani noted that resistance fighters are now equipped with missiles and weapons that can target U.S. warships anywhere in the region. The senior commander said Americans will finally be uprooted from the region. They made the remarks at a ceremony in the Iranian city of Mashhad on the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad. Ghani condemned as the most cowardly the manner in which the U.S. assassinated the two anti-terror icons. The Syrian president says assassinated Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani sought to foil Washington's divisive plots in the region. Bashar Assad noted that the anti-terror icon posed a threat to the interests of the United States and its allies in the region. The remarks came in a statement read out during a ceremony in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The event was held on the second anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Assad hailed the two commanders as the main pillars of resistance against enemies of the region. Kazakhstan's president says order has been mainly restored across the country following 5 days of violent protests triggered by soaring fuel prices. Qasem Jomart Tokayev said security operations will continue until, quote, militants are totally eliminated. Authorities say 26 armed criminals have been killed in clashes with police forces. The clashes also left 18 police officers dead and hundreds more injured. Over 3,000 people have been arrested. Meanwhile, the first batch of peacekeepers from a regional security alliance led by Russia has arrived in Kazakhstan. They were deployed to the country after the Kazakh government appealed for help. Russia says it sees the unrest as an attempt inspired from outside to undermine security of Kazakhstan. COVID cases keep surging in India, where new daily infections hit a seven-month high. The country on Friday reported over 117,000 new cases, taking the total to more than 35 million. The rise in cases is driven by the Omicron variant, which is overtaking Delta. Last spring, Delta caused a surge that resulted in thousands of deaths each day. Now, experts worry that the current surge could again see hospitals overwhelmed. Authorities in several Indian cities have already brought in restrictions to keep infections in check. The capital, New Delhi, is under an overnight curfew. It will impose further restrictions for weekend later on Friday. India's total COVID deaths are above 483,000. For more on that, I'm now joined by our correspondent in New Delhi, Munawwar Zaman. Munawwar, good afternoon to you. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us. So these figures are quite terrifying. Tell us more.
Glad to have you every time, mate. Well, the situation is, of course, alarming. I mean, you could easily make it on the streets, but there is, again, a problem with the mindset and the imagination that people are taking things for granted and things are being taken easily. Despite and regardless of the fact that April was the deadliest, last April, the country saw a deadliest period in its history, and it seems that people are not learning.
Our connection is lost. We will try to get back to one another as soon as we can establish a steady connection there. Now let's move on. Japan and the U.S. sign a new five-year agreement covering the continued basing of tens of thousands of American troops in that country. The two sides have also agreed to increase efforts to counter what they see as emerging threats. Listen.
We're launching a new research and development agreement that will make it easier for our scientists, for our engineers, and program managers to collaborate on emerging defense-related issues, from countering hypersonic threats to advancing space-based capabilities.
Blinken was speaking at a virtual meeting between foreign and defense ministers of Japan and the U.S. The ministers voiced concern about China's growing might. They said Beijing's efforts to undermine the rules-based order present or present challenges to the region and the world. Japan and the U.S. pledged to work together to deter and, if necessary, respond to what they called destabilizing activities in the region. The U.S. and its regional allies are at odds with China over a series of issues, including Taiwan. China says Taiwan is part of its territory and is opposed to the U.S.'s military support for the island. Well, I'm now joined by Seijiro Takeshita. He is a university professor and political analyst, joining us from Shizuoka. Mr. Takeshita, thank you for joining us. So the U.S. and Japan are going ahead with their defense collaboration, and they have cited China and North Korea as main emerging threats. What do you make of that?
Certainly. Usually this 2+2 accord comes every 2 years or so, but it's only 10 months since the last time they agreed. So obviously you can feel the urgency and the pressure that, you know, both Japan and the United States and, you know, allied nations around this area is feeling, especially the aggression from China.
And Fumio Kishida's government last month approved a record defense spending. Now, with that in mind, what is the role that Japan is going to play in the equation, in your opinion?
Yes, one of the coalition members of the free world, or I should say the Quad system, the Australians, Indians, the Japanese, and the Americans. And also, there will be, I would guess, a lot more, you know, co-alliances to come to basically ward off this excessive pressure that is being displayed by the Chinese, who is trying to get the hegemony not only through the economic side or telecommunication side or finance side, but from the military point as well. So obviously, Japan will be one of the forces amongst the free world who would like to basically sustain their values.
Many, many thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time. Mr. Seijiro Takeshita joining us from Shizuoka. Mr. Takeshita is a university professor and political analyst. Thank you for your time. Now, earlier we talked about COVID cases in India and the terrifying figures that are coming out of New Delhi in particular. I'm now joined again by Munawar Zaman, our correspondent in New Delhi, for more information on that.
Well, as I was speaking about this pandemic again, this is the third wave, what they say, but many believe it's a fourth wave. But as you picked up a point in the start when you said they have started night curfew, but many believe that night curfew is not what is required, because usually people don't go out in nights because there is a huge rush in the markets. Still, I can clearly see that there are buses, there is a public transport is flying, although they have certain guidelines. They have issued certain new guidelines for a car rationing, for example, or an event plan for shopkeepers and shopping malls and gymnasiums. But as we see as a capital, New Delhi and Mumbai, these are the states or places which are the worst affected, because these are the most populated states. And Delhi, New Delhi has more than 23 million people, and Mumbai is almost the same. That has millions of people living in. So they need more stringent measures so that they can at least keep a check on this new variant, Omicron, which many believe is spreading faster than the previous variants that this virus had. At the same time, the government, the state government and the central government is busy preparing. I could possibly see some hospitals preparing for beddings and oxygen supplies and many other essential equipments that they know is required when the wave hits hard. But many medical experts are believing that it is going to be worst by the mid-February, which is going to see the peak of it. But many also, health experts also say that the hospitalization ratio of this variant is less as compared to the previous ones. But still, we have to prepare for the worst, keeping in view the past experiences we had. So there are many guidelines in place. There are many health emergencies and health protocols that have been decided and also put in place. But as I said earlier, that they need more stringent measures, like we see in the public transport. People are overcrowding the buses. They are flouting all the protocols and guidelines. People are not wearing masks just to keep them on their chins. And the basic protocol is missing. So there's a lot to do that is to be making people aware of what exactly is happening, regardless of what happened in the past. Back to you.
Munawar, thank you for the details. Stay safe, please, and have a nice day. That was Munawar Zaman, our correspondent in New Delhi. U.S. President Joe Biden accuses his predecessor, Donald Trump, of spreading lies to overturn his 2020 election defeat. Listen.
And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest.
Biden made the remarks as he marked the first anniversary of the deadly attack by Trump's supporters on the Congress building. Speaking at the scene of the January 6 riots, Biden accused Trump of posing a continuing threat to American democracy. He noted that Trump was the first president in U.S. history who tried to prevent a peaceful transfer of power. Donald Trump immediately issued a statement in response, accusing Biden of trying to further divide America. Well, 1 year has passed since the supporters of former U.S. President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol Hill while lawmakers were certifying the victory of Joe Biden. Americans have been sharing their thoughts on the incident and its repercussions for the future of democracy and voting rights in their country. Let's take a look.
I think that voting rights and making sure that voting rights are ensured for everyone in the United States is the single most important issue that we have in the immediate term. And if that is not acted upon, I'm very concerned about the future of our democracy. And I think that I don't think secession is something that's going to happen, but I do believe there will be increasing violence unless we ensure the integrity of our votes. And I don't mean that in the sense that I believe there was a steal. I believe just the opposite. I think the attacks that have been made on secretaries of state around the country are disgusting, and we need to stop that immediately.
Yes, I think absolutely, because we have state legislatures that have authorized themselves to overturn people's votes and overturn what happens in individual states. And I don't know if we can count on the Supreme Court to protect our rights as voters, not in the district so much, but in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I think it was disproportionately represented. I mean, there were a lot of people protesting, but most of them are fairly peaceful. And then with that amount of crowd, you can't really control everybody.
To be honest, I feel like it's been more out of sight, out of mind. I think with how the media moves really fast, you kind of forget about what happened. I wouldn't say that I feel more confident that that couldn't happen again in the future. I would just say that it's kind of in the back of my mind now, and maybe a little bit more about where I'm going and where I'll be at, and try to get a little bit better pulse on what's going on in places that I travel to.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
The Limelight.
The House Committee investigating the 6th of January attack on the Capitol has requested that Sean Hannity, the star of Fox News host, respond to questions about his communications with former President Donald J. Trump and his staff in the days surrounding the riot. The article you're about to hear has been written by Michael Grimbaum and Luke Broadwater. The piece is titled, House Panel Asks Sean Hannity of Fox News to Cooperate in 6th of January Inquiry. The committee investigating the 6th of January attack on the Capitol has requested that Sean Hannity, the star of Fox News host, respond to questions about his communications with former President Donald J. Trump and his staff in the days surrounding the riot. In a letter on Tuesday, 4th of January, the committee asked for Mr. Hannity's voluntary cooperation, meaning that the host has not received a formal subpoena. The letter detailed a series of text messages between the conservative media star and senior officials in the Trump White House, illustrating Sean Hannity's unusually elevated role as an outside advisor to the Trump administration. The text suggests that Sean Hannity was aware of and deeply concerned about what Donald Trump was planning for 6th of January, and bracing for a possible mass resignation of top White House lawyers as a result. "We can't lose the entire White House counsel's office," Sean Hannity wrote to Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff at the time, in a 31st of December 2020 text message that the committee included in its letter. "I do not see 6th of January happening the way he's being told," Hannity said. They also indicate that the Fox News host, a longtime confidant of the former president, had knowledge of a flurry of high-level conversations at the White House involving Donald Trump himself about leaning on Vice President Mike Pence to use his ceremonial role in Congress's official electoral count to keep Donald Trump in office. "Pence pressure," Sean Hannity wrote in a 5th of January message, "White House counsel will leave." The texts were included in a trove of 9,000 pages of documents that Mark Meadows turned over to the panel in response to a subpoena. Donald Trump grappled with the political fallout of the attack, including a looming impeachment inquiry and rebukes from some top Republicans. Sean Hannity wrote on 10th of January to Mark Meadows and Representative Jim Jordan, an Ohio Republican and a key ally. Sean Hannity wrote, "He can't mention the election again, ever," Sean Hannity said in the message, referring to Donald Trump. "I did not have a good call with him today. And worse, I'm not sure what is left to do or say, and I don't like not knowing if it's truly understood." Ideas? A lawyer for Sean Hannity, Jay Sekulow, said on Tuesday that the committee's request would raise serious constitutional issues, including First Amendment concerns regarding freedom of the press. Fox News referred inquiries to Jay Sekulow's statement. The letter from the committee informed Sean Hannity that it believed the Fox News host had advanced knowledge regarding President Trump's and his legal team's planning for 6th of January, calling him a fact witness in our investigation. The committee wrote that it had obtained dozens of text messages between Sean Hannity and members of Donald Trump's inner circle, including a note on 5th of January in which Sean Hannity expressed concern about the next day's counting of Electoral College votes. "I'm very worried about the next 48 hours, Sean Hannity wrote. Mr. Hannity was one of several Fox News stars who became informal confidants to Donald Trump over the course of his administration, frequently conversing with the president by telephone and over meals in the White House. "He was more than a Fox host. He was also a confidant, advisor, campaigner for the former president, Representative Adam Schiff, a California Democrat and member of the committee, said on MSNBC on Tuesday, 4th of January. Last month, the committee revealed that Sean Hannity had contacted Mark Meadows on 6th of January as rioters overtook the Capitol, asking, "Can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol." The Fox News stars Laura Ingraham and Brian Kilmeade sent similar notes asking that Donald Trump take steps to quell the violence. In Fox News primetime on 6th of January, Sean Hannity told his viewers that all of today's perpetrators must be arrested and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, adding, "Every good and decent American we know will and must condemn what happened at the Capitol." A spokesman for the committee declined to say on Tuesday if additional Fox News hosts would be asked to answer questions. Sean Hannity is the most prominent media star so far that the committee has contacted about testifying. The committee previously issued a subpoena for the conspiracy theorist and InfoWars host Alex Jones, who has sued the committee to try to stonewall the investigation. The letter to Sean Hannity was signed by Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi, and the committee chairman, and also its vice chairwoman, Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming. "We have no doubt that you'd love our country and respect our Constitution," Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney wrote. "Now is the time to step forward and serve the interests of your country." Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump on Tuesday, 4th of January, abruptly cancelled the news conference that he had scheduled at his Mar-a-Lago resort for Thursday evening, 6th of January, on the one-year anniversary of the breaching of the United States Capitol. Donald Trump's initial decision on 30th of December to counter-program the remembrance events to be held on Capitol Hill had drawn immediate concern from Republicans and allies, who questioned the wisdom of his seizing the spotlight for himself, saying it would be a needless and harmful distraction. Republicans, including Donald Trump in a statement on Tuesday, 4th of January, have tried to divert attention from the fact that it was the former president's supporters who turned violent as they sought to stall the certification of the 2020 presidential election and to falsely blame House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for the violence. Donald Trump's encouraging speech to supporters on 6th of January 2021, delivered shortly before the riot, was the centerpiece of his second impeachment by the Democratic-led House of Representatives. He was acquitted by the Senate when it failed to reach a two-thirds majority to convict him of incitement of insurrection. In his statement, Donald Trump faulted both the media and the ongoing House investigation into the assault on the Capitol for his cancellation, but said he would discuss many of those important topics at a rally he's planning to hold on 15th of January in Arizona.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Midstream.
Qasem Soleimani, the most prominent name in the struggle with global arrogance. The man of Iran who chose to fight America and Israel. The man of war and politics from Iran the Revolution to Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Palestine, Yemen, and beyond. At the beginning of 2020, the decision was taken in the White House to cross all red lines and target the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. American planes carried out the assassination meters away from Baghdad International Airport so that the man, accompanied by the deputy head of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was martyred. The first anniversary of the martyrdom of General Soleimani passed in 2021, with America at its weakest, passing through an election that witnessed a lot of controversy and objections, which overthrew Donald Trump, who made the decision to assassinate, and brought Joe Biden, who criticized his predecessor's policies towards Iran and promised a more diplomatic course. Martyr Soleimani was responsible for handling many regional files, and so he did with great capabilities. By targeting him, America aimed to crush his accomplishments, but it is clear that steadfastness is still the main feature of Soleimani's entire axis of resistance. Indeed, the regional resistance is advancing on many fronts, while Iran perseveres and does not concede. Rather, Iran forces others to solicit negotiations with it, which means that his assassination did not provide America with the result it had hoped for. The commander excelled in military fieldwork. With his increasing military power on the one hand and his great popularity with the Iranian people and the resisting peoples of the region, especially after his main role in eliminating Daesh in Iraq and Syria and thwarting American plans that were prepared for the two countries, the United States put him on its list of terrorism and imposed sanctions on him. Israel, for its part, considered him the most dangerous figure and placed him at the top of its list of assassinations. In addition to Palestinian resistance leader Martyr Baha Abu al-Ata and Lebanese resistance leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. When the Americans took the decision to assassinate Qasem Soleimani and his companion Haj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, their goal was to stop the escalation of the axis of resistance strength and capabilities by removing the Quds Force commander, the actual mastermind and coordinator of the resistance operations against the Americans, the Israelis, and the terrorism emanating from both sides, being Daesh and its affiliates. They failed. Soleimani won martyrdom and the resistance won an inspiration that will fuel decades of steadfastness and perseverance. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, Ammar Osman. Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani is the martyr of the entire Islamic nation, and the personality of that great martyr must be known to everyone as an influential figure in the Islamic world. Martyr Soleimani's approach accomplished many achievements in various cultural and social fields, especially in vindicating the personality of this righteous martyr. What would have happened to the region and the world if Martyr Soleimani was not present on the battlefields in Syria and Iraq? The efforts of Martyr Soleimani were focused on both conventional and soft war. Martyr Soleimani's jihad and resistance confronting terrorism and saving the lives of Muslims and Christians from the Takfiri terrorists' knives will never be erased from the pages of history, as will his support to the oppressed Palestinian people, his fight against the Zionist occupation and Takfiri terrorists in Syria and Iraq, and his support for Yemen, which all fall within the framework of his support for the natives' right of resistance in the face of foreign occupation and aggression. Now, to discuss this issue, with us from Beirut is Dr. Yahya Ghaddar, Secretary General of the Global Gathering in Support of the Choice of Resistance. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Ghaddar. Now, in his work, Martyr Soleimani combined the jihadi, military, diplomatic, moral, and humanitarian dimensions. He was the one who wears a combat jacket and a war helmet and attends the front lines with the fighters. And he was the same person who was delivering medicine and medical equipment to his economically besieged country, Iran, and to those who were besieged by terrorists as well in Iraq and Syria. 2 years after the martyrdom of this great leader, how do you describe the loss of such a great leader?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
The excess of resistance and the resistance factions in various arenas lost a leader who was a real fighter, a clever expert, brother and father for every mujahid in every battle against American and Israeli hegemony. His loss is irreplaceable due to his personal characteristics, his virtues, his knowledge, his expertise, his humility, and his exceptional abilities. However, he succeeded in preparing generations to come and thousands of fierce fighters with the same qualities and traits he held. I mean, in fact, it's a great loss, but this loss gave birth to fierce fighters. Unfortunately, we all know that such leaders are not born to our nation by the dozen. The leader that Martyr Soleimani was brings inspiration to this region. It brings the people of West Asia hope that one day they will live to see all occupation eliminated. They have faith and hope that they will retain control of their lands and resources. They believe that it's their right to be free and independent of all intervention, and their right shall be attained by the sacrifices of Martyr Soleimani's students.
Well, Dr. Ghadad, the commander had been doing military fieldwork for 40 years of his life, sometimes in Salahuddin in Iraq, during the recapture of Tikrit from Daesh, and sometimes in Al-Bukamal, which was the last stronghold of Daesh in Syria, and other times he was also found in accompanying Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, the leader of Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance, along with Martyr Imad Mughniyeh in the southern suburbs of Beirut in the 2006 July war. And maybe sometimes even meeting with Palestinian leaders, especially in Lebanon when he visited Lebanon. He was indeed the thread that connected all of this resistance in the region. Do you think that the connection is still there?
It's true, as you mentioned. Martyr Soleimani was present in every arena and battlefield, and in every war or pivotal battle. Distances never prevented him from being present, nor the difference of languages and dialects, nor did the many borders and the many nationalities that took part in the fight against Takfiri terrorism. His martyrdom is an additional incentive to strengthen and develop relations between all factions. After his martyrdom, relations turned into complementarity, and the different factions united their fronts to avenge his blood by vowing to expel the American occupation from Iraq and Syria and to secure the road to Palestine in a faster, less expensive way. In the end, the axis of resistance has been established. There is no longer any possibility for any power in the world, neither the American hegemony, nor the Zionist occupation, nor the Arab treachery. No matter how ferocious they are, and how much money they spend, and no matter the fake news media they activate, after what Martyr Soleimani presented, no one will be able to change the strong alliance forces of the axis of resistance that is approaching victory step by step. God willing, it will achieve all its goals in the face of American imperialism and Zionist aggression.
Well, Dr. Ghadad, it also became clear of the great role that he played in supporting, that Hajj Qasim played in supporting and financing, training and arming various Palestinian factions who stood to confront the Israeli occupation. And this confirms the seriousness of a leader like Soleimani and a force like the Quds Force and a country like Iran in fighting Israel and in supporting the native resistance movements. Yet certain Arab propaganda emits the absolute opposite about Iran and about leader Soleimani. Has the resistance lost the media war in West Asia as the wave of normalization maybe have hit many Arab states?
Not at all. The resistance factions did not lose the media war despite all the money, effort, and maneuvers that was unfortunately offered by what they call media elites. With all this hegemony, the resistance factions did not lose the media war, but rather they won and consolidated their gains. The martyrdom of General Soleimani and the commander of the Quds force hardened the position of the resistance. The resistance vowed to escalate its war to teach the enemies unforgettable lessons and defeat them by forcing America to withdraw from the region with its flag broken and defeated. This prompted the U.S., before evacuating the area, to order its tools and agents to unite their efforts to secure protection for their shaken regimes. This compelled these Arab regimes to announce what was once in secret out to the public. Some consider that the declaration of normalization is a victory, but that is completely false, because the Arab regimes that signed the deal of the century did so under pressure from former U.S. President Trump. Trump forced them to go public with normalization after they had been secretly agents for the Zionist entity ever since the establishment of these Arab regimes. Therefore, declaring their normalization in public is a victory for the axis of resistance and not the other way around. Therefore, the announcement of the normalization will not change the balance of power, but rather expose the traitors and weaken them. In any case, meeting of five adults does not produce a young man, and the merger of bankrupt companies does not produce a fully functioning company. The normalization and betrayal of the regimes is evidence of the strength of the resistance and the weakness of these treacherous regimes.
Well, please stay tuned with us, Dr. Ghaddar, and please also stay tuned with us because we will be talking more about this matter and specifically about the role of the Mossad that has been put out in the media for the first time, being acknowledged by the Zionist entity about the role of the Mossad in assassinating General Qasem Soleimani.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Former head of the Zionist Israeli Military Intelligence Division, Tamir Heyman, revealed that the Mossad played a vital role in the assassination of the former commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Forces, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, according to a report published by a magazine closely affiliated with the Israeli intelligence services. Now, according to that report, Heyman indicated that his tenure as head of the intelligence division witnessed two important, what he called, liquidations. One of which was the assassination of Commander Soleimani, and the other, the leader of the Islamic Jihad movement, Baha Abul Atta, who was assassinated in November 2019. Now, Heyman, the now retired general who headed military intelligence until October, appears to be the first official to confirm Israel's involvement, something we really never doubted. The role of the Mossad in the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in this following report.
Former head of the Israeli Military Intelligence Division, Tamir Heyman, revealed that the Mossad played a role in the assassination of former commander of the Quds Force, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, in January 2020. This was the first public acknowledgement of Israel's role in the operation by a Zionist official. Heyman even stressed that, quote, his tenure as head of the intelligence division witnessed two important liquidations, one of which was the killing of Commander Soleimani, and in the other, the leader of the Islamic Jihad movement, Baha Abul Atta, unquote, who was assassinated in November 2019. A week after the assassination of Martyr Soleimani by U.S. drone operators, the American NBC News reported that Israeli intelligence helped confirm the details of Soleimani's flight from Damascus to Baghdad. Earlier this year, Yahoo News reported that Israel had access to Soleimani's numbers and gave that intelligence to the United States. But Tamir Heyman, the now retired general who headed military intelligence until October, appears to be the first official to confirm Israel's involvement. Heyman's comment statements were published in the November issue of a Hebrew language magazine closely affiliated with Israel's intelligence services. The interview was held in late September, a couple weeks before his retirement from the military. The authors wrote that Haman opened the interview by talking about the American airstrike that killed Soleimani, but in which Israeli intelligence played a part. Assassinating Soleimani was an achievement, since our main enemy in my eyes are the Iranians. This is what Haman told the magazine. He said that there were two significant and important assassinations during my term as head of army intelligence. Haman called Soleimani, quote, the engine of the train of Iranian entrenchment, end quote, in neighboring Syria, adding that Israel has carried out multiple operations to disrupt the spread of Iranian weapons and funds throughout the region. Haman's interview was published as the P5+1 and Iran were engaged in negotiations to reach a new JCPOA. The previous deal, struck in 2015, unraveled after the United States unilaterally withdrew in 2018 and reimposed crippling economic sanctions on Iran. Israeli occupation officials consistently remained mum on the strike, only to say that the killing was a stabilizing event in the region for the near future that would provide Israel with a window of opportunity to increase its operations against what Zionists call Iranian entrenchment. However, as time passes, more details are being revealed about the assassination, as Axios reported that former U.S. President Donald Trump told Israeli journalist Barak Ravid that he felt manipulated by Tel Aviv, stating that he was, quote, very disappointed in Israel having to do with that event, end quote, and that former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had been willing to fight Iran to the last American soldier.
Now, still with us in the studio in Beirut is Dr. Yahya Ghaddad, Secretary General of the Global Gathering in support of the Choice of Resistance, to talk about the role of the Mossad in assassinating a leader like Qasem Soleimani. Dr. Ghaddad, assassinating Soleimani was an achievement, since our main enemy in my eyes are the Iranians. This is what Tamir Heyman, the now retired general who headed Israel's military intelligence, announced last month. Does it come as a surprise for you that Israel has had a hand in assassinating leader Soleimani and his comrade Haj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis?
It's not surprising at all, the Israeli role in the assassination of Commander Soleimani, as it always has a hand in all the conspiracies, bombings, acts of sabotage, chaos, and attacks in Libya, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere. America and Israel are complementary in conspiracy and hostility towards Arabs, Muslims, and free nations of the world. This Israeli recognition did not surprise us at all. Rather, we believe that this recognition will call for a response from the resistance axis. Just as the response began directly after the assassination of Commander Soleimani and his companions, and the response continues according to the terms of the resistance axis, which works to remove the American occupation entity from Iraq and Syria and the Israeli occupation from Palestine.
Well, the timing of the interview was a bit interesting, because the interview was published as the P5+1 and Iran were engaged in negotiations to reach a new JCPOA in Vienna. Since the previous deal, which was struck in 2015, was unilaterally unraveled by the United States of America, who withdrew in 2018 because this is how Trump felt about it. And he reimposed crippling economic sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran. Why was this interview published at this specific timing, in your opinion?
Without a doubt, the Zionist entity is working hard with all its might to thwart putting this nuclear agreement back on track. It might be an unintended coincidence, but it may also be an attempt by Israel to invest in the negotiations and seek to sabotage them. Israel is terrified and defeated. It's afraid of America returning submissively to the nuclear agreement, which it unilaterally withdrew from during the Trump administration. When we hear all the leaders of this entity talking about the nuclear agreement, we see that they are already in great confusion due to the ongoing negotiations. Therefore, they are trying by all means to obstruct America's return to this nuclear agreement. We must not underestimate the role of global Zionism.
which dominates political decisions in the United States and to a large extent in Europe as well, especially in France recently. Therefore, they are trying all possible ways to delay any agreement process. The Israelis consider that if they cannot prevent this agreement, then at least delaying this agreement for a few months or even years is a victory for them. Therefore, we see that negotiations taking place are taking much longer than expected. But at the same time, the Islamic Republic of Iran is not in a hurry. It has its own conditions. If Americans are able to achieve these conditions, the first of which is the removal of all sanctions, only then will Iran be able to accept a return to the nuclear agreement.
Well, Dr. Ghaddar, according to the Iranian-Iraqi Joint Investigation Committee on the file of the assassination of Commander Soleimani and his companions, all possible judicial and legal measures will be taken to prosecute and to punish what they called the perpetrators and the elements involved in this crime and the assassinations. Will that be enough to curb the Israeli-U.S. urge to commit similar crimes and similar violations in the near future?
No, never. This will not be sufficient and will not constitute elements of force to prevent Israel and America from committing more assassinations and aggressions. We believe that what was taken by force can only be recovered by force. These are the words of the late leader Jamal Abdel Nasser. The resistance alone is the compelling and deterrent response. And this is what Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah announced on behalf of the resistance factions. Sayyid Nasrallah said the call of the ultimate response by expelling the Americans from Iraq and Syria by force and resistance. There is no other way but resistance. This does not negate the fact that the legal work made by the Iraqi-Iranian committee is not important, not at all. Their work is very important, especially as an evidence in front of international human rights organizations. The criminal act of terrorism that was committed by America with the help of Israel should always be dealt with both on the field and in the courtroom. However, working only in the courtroom is not enough. The Americans have no place amongst the peoples of this nation. This region is tired of their imperialism. Palestine is tired of Zionism. Both should be eliminated, and it will happen in our lifetime, God willing.
Dr. Ghaddar, Iran has always been dismissed by the West as Israel's main threat in the region of West Asia, but so far there has been multiple provocations by the Israeli entity against the Islamic Republic of Iran, from assassinations to open aggressions to sabotage, and it doesn't seem to be backing down anytime soon. Is there a possibility that Israel might actually push to ignite what it has always worked hard for achieving, which is a global direct war against the Islamic Republic of Iran?
The options before the usurping entity are very few, but still there is a very weak possibility, but an irrational possibility, like that of a suicide bomber who dragged the world into a war against the Islamic Republic of Iran. If this war takes place, it would be like the day of resurrection. If this war takes place, it will change everything that preceded it, and it will practically be in the interest of the axis of resistance and the interest of the Arab and Islamic nation, which will be liberated once and for all from all forms of imperialism and colonialism. That is why we believe that this war, if it occurs, will only be in the interest of the resistance axis in West Asia and will be translated as a crushing victory for the resistance axis and a brutal defeat for American imperialism and Zionism and their tools of Arab treacherous regimes.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Yahya Ghaddar, Secretary General of the Global Gathering in support of the Choice of Resistance, for being with us to talk about the second anniversary of the loss of a very important leader to the entire West Asian region. Thank you very much for your contribution. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Mideast stream. Please be safe. Assalamu alaikum.
in the limelight.
A barrage of delay tactics as U.S. Republicans are expected to do well in 2022 midterm elections that would give them control to shut down the inquiry about the 6th of January attack on the Capitol. We now present you an article written by Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled, U.S. Capitol Attack Panel in Race Against Time as Trump Allies Seek to Run Out Clock.